We are so glad you are here today. Hope you're having a good Sunday.
Yes, good morning, everyone.
I'm Mike Deason.
Lorene Jaffe. Or afternoon now, I guess.
It's
officially afternoon.
Yes.
So we've got a lot of good things going on right now.
Yeah, I know the headsets are sort of low, guys. I wonder if we can turn that up. I'm having a rough time hearing that
right,
as well.
Right, so we're not sure if y'all can hear us on the air.
Yeah, but no, we can sort of hear ourselves, but we got
right.
I'm trying to boost the headset thing. Anyhow, all right, here's the deal. This is the pledge drive week. We're on the air, Lorene.
Yes, it's
just,
we are.
We are. We just can't hear ourselves very well, but that's okay. We are on the air with our pledge drive at WMNF this week. We should introduce ourselves. By the way, I'm Mike Deason. That's Lorene Jaffe over there. You were looking the other way. And, you know, WMNF exists through your support.
That's right.
And this show, which is one of the more unique shows. You will not hear a show like this anywhere in the Tampa Bay area on radio or certainly on TV. But the only way we can do it is through your support. And so we're hoping that you will join us and make a call.
That's right. So it's WMNF's semi-annual pledge drive. They were a little bit behind before coming into this weekend, so we've got a lot of money to make up to keep this station, this program on the air. Please call in. It's 813-238-8001, 813-238-8001. We'll be taking calls from the donors throughout the hours, and we really appreciate you calling in and supporting the station. So we got a jam-packed show to fill in today. So quick word on our season. Obviously, we're right now smack in the middle of the days of awe. We just celebrated Rosh Hashanah, as we talked about last week, which is the head of the year, 5780. It is our new year. It is a time where we begin sort of these, it's a time of repentance, teshuva. We go before and we're prepared to reincarnate God as our king. And we enter into Yom Kippur, which begins this week, which is the most holy and sacred day on our calendar, which begins sundown this Tuesday night. And it will extend 26 plus hours and ending the evening of Wednesday, October 9th. And, you know, one of the things I love about this holiday, it is the day that we ask God to forgive us, that he would purify, cleanse us. And from there, we go into the holiday, which is happens to be my favorite holiday of the year, which is Sukkot, which concludes with Simchat Torah. And Sukkot is 8 days of celebration. It's actually a mitzvot. It's a command to celebrate. You're supposed to eat and drink, and you know, we celebrate the time that Hashem dwelled with us in the wilderness, and there's different customs associated with that. But it's, I love that it's a mitzvot, that you start this year fresh, renewed, and you start it with celebration. And it's just a really wonderful, joyful time for many of us. And so just want to share that little bit of history.
Okay, and I've got to take care of some biz. We got a pledge for $250 from, let's see. Is that mic 3 or is that mic 4? Yeah, try that. Okay.
Hello.
You're
testing, right. Testing. How are you? This is Walter L. Smith II from the Sunday Forum. And thank you. Listen, I'm glad to be on your show.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here.
Happy to have
come
you.
On here. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. But we did, and happy. Is it Rosh Hashanah?
Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah.
Last week.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Shalom.
Thank you.
That's about as close as I can get to it, guys. So listen, we have Bowtie George Shaw, who made a pledge of $250 for the Sunday Forum, and he is working with the organization called Unheard Save a Child, and we are so glad to have that. But we got to have him call back in because they didn't get his information in order to make the.
Okay, so Bowtie George, give
please
a call.
Call back.
Yeah, that's right.
813-238-8001. And go ahead, you just do it again.
813-238-8001. Call in with your pledge.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Awesome. Hey, thank you very
see
much.
See y'all later. Bye.
Shalom.
All right. Let me take care of one other thing. We want to thank Lorene Jaffe, who is the co-host here, because she brought pizza and salad and lunch for all the volunteers today who are answering the phones. And so we want to thank you for doing that.
We're thrilled to have them here helping out today.
And we want to thank the WMNF M&F cleaning crew, all-star janitorial who provided sausage and chicken biscuits for volunteers taking your calls this morning. Thanks to Miss Diane, Jocelyn, and Richard Price for feeding and caffeinating us. So it's a little different than normal, but you know, this is the way a community radio station stays on the air. This is the way the Third Opinion stays on the air. And so we're going to bug you throughout the show to please call and help us make our goal. We've got a raise for our show, $2,200 today. So if you can help us out, please make a call.
Definitely. So lots of news. I mean, obviously lots of news for Jews, lots of positive things, some scary things. A lot of things have come up this week. Obviously, Jews in India are on high alert. The government received information about terrorist attacks, Al-Qaeda and or ISIS, thinking about targeting synagogues and Jewish sites on Yom Kippur. That obviously is very alarming to us. And this goes back to my point, like, yeah, there are Jews in India. We're all over the world. And no, they don't all look alike. I mean, we are every color, every shade, you know, from every background, from every nation.
Well, I mean, in that vein, there's new genetic research that shows 25% of Latinos have some Jewish relationship, some Jewish blood, or are Jewish. That was astounding to me.
I know.
That I mean, I knew there were some, and we've talked about the Mizrahi Jews and all. But
and the Sephardic Jews, that's right. So there, I guess, based upon the latest DNA evidence that's being collected globally, it's estimated that there could be 25% of Hispanics or people who were exiled through Spain or Portugal through the different inquisitions that came to the New World could be of Jewish descent and direct Jewish descent. And there's actually an organization within the Knesset, the Israeli Knesset, that focuses on identifying these people and helping them be part of the community. And so there was I'll just read from this article that was in the Jerusalem Post that talks about this. And it says it's really part of who we are. It's actually Halakhic law. It's a Halakhic mandate, which means it's Jewish law to find these individuals who were forcibly converted. So these are descendants, Hispanic Latinos, who were forcibly converted Jews at the time of Inquisition. And it is Jewish mandate to find them and to bring them back and to rectify that historic injustice. Even in the Zionist Congress, Herzl talked about it. He says, about the idea that Zionism cannot be fulfilled until the vision of all those who we lost are returned from exile. And that would include even these, conversios and that were forcibly converted. And to make that point, there's this great article this week. She was a Cuban woman, a strong Catholic Hispanic in Miami, who had, generation after generation, they had these recipes that they were handing down, this cookbook from grandmother to grandmother. It was this maternal line. And it was all kosher. And she didn't put the dots together, and all of a sudden one day she starts doing this research to figure out more about these recipes, pork chops that aren't really pork chops but look like pork chops, to hide from the others, because as Jews you don't eat pork, but in Spain they did. So to hide the fact that you weren't eating pork, to like create something that looks like that and doing all this thing. But she actually went through, it was a 10-year process, but was able to demonstrate through her maternal line going all the way back to the early 1400s that she was a Jew.
But at the time of the Crusades, obviously a lot of Hispanic people decided, I'm not going to be say that I'm Jewish anymore, because that kept them alive. I mean, they were going to be killed otherwise. And I have a bunch of friends that live here that came from Cuba originally that are Jewish, and they refer to themselves, my friends do, as Juban Qs. Juban Qs, yeah.
I love that.
There was also a thing where the American Jewish Committee is taking on Hezbollah.
Yes.
And I was thrilled to see that. They attacked a Jewish community center in the same vein in Buenos Aires, right. A bus carrying Israeli tourists to the Black Sea coastal town of Burgas, Bulgaria, was targeted by a terrorist group. A bomb detonated, killed 5 Israelis and a Bulgarian bus driver, and wounded 32 others. And finally, the American Jewish community said, we've got to stand up against this terrorism that is going on.
Right. To say enough is enough. I mean, and I really, and I personally remember that attack that on that bus from Bulgaria, and I remember watching the video of it and this young man who had put on this wig and sort of just the intention. I mean, you see these young families with children walking by him, and he gets right on that bus right behind them and blows himself up. You know, this the horrific devastation. But specifically, you know, AJC was meeting face to face with leaders at the UN General Assembly, bring up this issue because both the Netherlands and the UK have banned and identified Hezbollah as a terrorist organization, but other countries in the EU, including Germany, had made this distinction and continue to make this distinction between Hezbollah as a political arm running Lebanon and Hezbollah as a terrorist arm. So, and AJC saying, no, there is no distinction, and you have to stop letting these terrorists, these Hezbollah operatives, work and raise money and plot attacks safely in your country. So I thought that was awesome that AJC was doing this.
But on the same front, there was an excellent editorial or think piece by Alan Dershowitz, who I have said on the air, I'm not a big Alan Dershowitz fan.
I know.
I mean, I think he's lost it. I really do. But he is still a brilliant attorney.
He is. I like him.
I don't know. I think he's off the deep end. But that's beside the point. He wrote about the anti-Semitism that is going on in Europe right now.
Right.
And the excuse for so many of these people who their ancestors were perpetrators of Nazism,
right,
say, well, no, I don't hate Jews. I just hate Israel.
and that's the whole point. Like, they're trying to make this distinction. That's why there really is no difference. I mean, that's where this anti-Israel really turns into it is anti-Semitism. They're trying to make this distinction. But okay, so what other people group on the face of the earth do you say, you know, I don't, you know, hate French people. I just hate France.
It's not the same as saying I hate French fries.
Right. I don't hate Cuba. I just hate Cubans.
Yeah.
I don't hate Puerto Rico. I just hate Puerto Ricans. I mean, like, what when you understand the logic of it, there is no logic. It just is like they're trying to mask their hate, and which is a hate crime. It's just that perpetuation
but
of hate.
That does not mean that you have to be in lockstep with the policies of everything that Israel does. As you know, and as I have said on the air here, like Dershowitz, I am not a Netanyahu fan. I'm hoping when all of the crazy politics ends, and we try to sort it out with Martin Fletcher last week, and nobody knows what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's still not resolved, so who knows? But I will tell you, like, look, I mean, there's plenty of politicians and plenty of policies here in our own country, in our own state, that I don't agree with. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that's, you know, that's our freedom of speech, and you have that freedom and that right to do that. But there's a very big difference. So, I mean, there actually has been a lot of, and we could talk about it some more, terrorism this week. There, a man screaming Allahu Akbar, as well as saying very, you know, F Israel, he was a Syrian refugee, ran into a synagogue in Berlin. This was right before the start of prayers Friday night on Shabbat. Fortunately, he was tackled. He had a knife in his hand. He was tackled and taken into custody before anything happened. So, you know, that was a miracle there. And what I thought was probably really disturbing, we saw a lot, this was sort of getting a lot of buzz on social media, was a young Jewish boy in Australia who was forced to kiss the sneakers of a Muslim boy. And that just, you know, there were a couple of incidents actually reported in Australia drawing a lot of outcry about that. I thought the nice thing that came out of that, the parents who were interviewed, the parents of this Jewish boy had reached out to the parents of the Muslim boy, and the parents of the Muslim boy said, you know, we don't condone that behavior, you know, and they were not happy that had happened. So,
it just shows that there is anti-Semitism throughout the world. I thought there was an interesting juxtaposition about President Trump, because he held a call with a bunch of Jewish leaders,
yep,
talking about what he feels for Israel and what he's done for Israel. And he has done, you know, again, boy, it sounds like I am a Debbie Downer today, or Mr. Negative Nelly, but I'm not a big Trump fan. But that's fair to say. But he talks about the things that he has done for Israel and with these leaders, of course, moving the embassy and the Golan Heights and all. So he went off on that. But then there was an opinion piece saying that he utters anti-Semitic statements. For example, even the shifty Schiff for Adam Schiff, congressman that's leading the inquiry into impeachment. Trump has said in the same editorial was out in the Jewish, was it the Jerusalem Post? I can't remember where it was from. But anyway, he says that Trump has said, yeah, I like the Jewish people because they're really good with money. You know, that's
you know, I don't know about that piece, but I do know. So you're referring, Mike's referring, there's, and you can see the actual transcript. Yeah. It's the White House High Holy Days call, and it was on Friday, September 27th.
They don't like transcripts today.
Right.
That's not a good word. It's a summary. No, I'm only kidding.
Well, this is a transcript of the
no,
call.
No, it is. It is.
And,
yeah.
it was actually a really nice call.
It was.
Discussion. And these are normal calls. Every president does this. They have calls with leaders in the Jewish community, and Trump has instituted it. He speaks with the leadership. And I thought one of the things that was interesting that came out of this call I was unaware of, and I thought was just a really nice thing, is that Trump has appointed, a new special envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism, and the individual is Elon Carr. And Elon Carr spoke on this call, and he was talking about really what he's been doing in Europe to combat anti-Semitism. He was saying, you know, this Tuesday he was in Warsaw, where he set forth key strategies to combat anti-Semitism to the 57 different national governments of the OSCE region. He was then in Brussels, which is a whole, you know, they've got lots of issues, at their parliament, where the Israeli government and he put together, discussion to combat the anti-Semitic BDS movement. And then talks about just being on calls with leaders regularly in the U.S., dealing with anti-Semitism on college campuses, dealing with the far right, white supremacy issues, radical left hatred, and different. So I just thought this was a very positive call. So talking about some of the things that they were doing, I think you have to separate the two issues. You have to sort of separate whether you like the president or not versus some of the things that are happening, which I think are important, that this is coming from the administration for the Jewish community.
It is, but it's a dichotomy then when you hear him say, I like Jewish people because they're good with money. Come on, man. Anyhow.
Well, he said a lot of more things than that.
Oh, yeah. His son-in-law is Jewish.
Right.
His daughter is Jewish.
And he has surrounded himself with Jews. I will say this about the president, despite what people think about him, and I'm not defending him because I am not his defender, but I thought for the Jewish world, the one thing that was interesting is that the rabbis have more access under this presidency than they have in several of the last, including Bush, Obama, etc. So I thought, you know, in that, at least there's
access.
They
tend to be the conservative rabbis. I don't mean by in the reform conservative right. Orthodox, but I mean those with conservative political views have more access to him than the liberal.
I don't know whether or not that's true. I just know that the rabbis have more access, and that community has had more opportunity for at least dialogue to be part of that discussion. I think for the Jewish world, dealing with some of our anti-Semitism, to me, that's important anyway. That
okay.
At least we have a voice.
Yes, we do. We're gonna welcome back a friend shortly, but please let me one more time bug you to please call the number 813-238-8001. This is our semi-annual fund drive. We need to raise money to help keep our program on the air.
WMNF really needs money right now. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the program, they're a little behind on the pledge drive so far for the week. So please call in. Please support your community radio.
Okay. So we have talked before about Israel Aid.
Oh, yes.
Yotam's
been on with us before.
He has. Well, let me get him on the air here.
So Yotam, as everyone might remember, he is the CEO of the NGO Israel Aid, which is based in Israel. They are...
Non-governmental organization. Some people don't know the acronyms.
What his organization does is oftentimes they are the first on the scene in major national disasters all around the world. And for the Bahamas, in the most recent hurricane, they were there. They are still there. They're one of the first on the scene. And he's here today to give us a quick update about what's going on the island and maybe give us all some insight into maybe ways that we can all help.
Yotam, you with us?
Yes. Hi, everyone.
Thank you for taking time to talk to us today.
Yes. By the way, first, Shana Tova. Sure. Thank you for being with us.
Shana Tova.
So how's it going?
No, thanks for having me. Look, it's very intense, and it's always on the Jewish holidays. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, 2 years ago it was Puerto Rico, and you know, and the hurricanes in Florida actually was around the same time, and now it's the Bahamas that totally devastated, and we have a team on the ground of about 12 kids, including water engineers and trauma specialists and disaster management people, and they've been there since day two after the hurricane.
Since day two, you said, Yotam?
Yes, since 2 days after the after the storm left the island.
So what type of team do you have on the island right now?
So it's quite diverse. It's a lot of different expertise because the needs are very diverse. We have, as I said, water engineers who are now helping people get access to clean water in the two islands that were completely devastated. We have a team of trauma specialists who are working mainly with the children who lost their homes and they are now in shelter. So they are providing what we call child-friendly space activities, basically a safe space for the children to learn and play after they lost their homes. We're also training teachers in helping the long-term trauma that the children will face. We partner with the local government, the Ministry of Education, and the National Emergency Management Center. And you know, it's devastating because it's one of those things that you hear about in the news in the first 2-3 days, and then everyone moves on. But the recovery will take years, and that's where we're planning to stay. We're planning to be there for at least 2 more years.
Wow.
Where do your workers stay? What kind of accommodations do they have? Because there's not much there.
So they're based in two main islands, right? So on the main island, which near the capital Nassau, that wasn't actually affected, but that's where thousands of children were evacuated to. So that's where the shelters are. And there's no problem of accommodation because everything is still functioning. And then the main part of our team is in Grand Bahamas, which is one of the two islands that was completely destroyed. And we stay there with in the beginning in a warehouse where we you know, distributed a lot of the relief supplies from. So very, very basic living conditions. And now we have one hotel that's still operating on the island, and we're staying there. But it's very basic. They didn't have electricity for the first 2 weeks, and hot water, and communication is challenging. It's getting better, but still long way.
It's just devastating. I spent 4 weeks in Homestead after Hurricane Andrew, and at least we could drive to Fort Lauderdale to get electricity and water. But even when you're on an island, you can't do that. But it is. Incredibly devastating, right. Disorienting, depressing, and it's tough not only for the people who are affected, we talked about this last time, but for your workers to continually see this day after day after day. Yeah. It takes a toll on them, doesn't it?
For sure. And I'll be honest and say that we need to still get better in how we support our workers, but we're getting there, and we have a team of psychotherapists that only are what we call helping the helpers. They're providing with emotional support for our teams on the ground. And more importantly, when they go back, because when you're on the ground, you know, it's all very intense and the adrenaline keeps you going and you forget about your sleep, about your food, about everything. But when you're back, that's when, you know, the guilt feeling starts and that's when a lot of emotional support is needed in the long run.
So Yotam,
I do want to say that on the positive side, just to add that the community in Florida, the Jewish community in particular, was extremely supportive. So that's the good news, both in Jewish federations and synagogues and rabbis and individuals really, because it's just, you know, just around the corner. So a lot of the supplies that we ship was from, we shipped from Florida, from Fort Lauderdale, because it's actually much closer to get there from Fort Lauderdale than it is from some of the islands in the Bahamas.
Right.
So this is sort of the positive news.
So tell us, Yotam, because I know that, you know, you've seen a lot of the devastation. You've been there for since day two. For those of us who are still here in the States and you know, want to do what we can and our part in helping out, you know, tell us, what are some of the greatest needs that you're seeing? What are things that people can do to help the people, the Bahamian people on the islands?
So first of all, to understand that this is a long-term recovery process. People, again, don't hear about it anymore on CNN, so they think everything is fine. No, it will take time. It will take a long time.
News people have attention deficit, whatever it is.
ADHD. Making his point exactly.
Yeah.
They're following the next tweet, you know, they're changing the next tweet. But, and there's a lot of tweets out there. But you know, I'm not blaming the news. I'm just saying, like, this is something that I want everyone to think about, that it will take a long time. And if we need long-term support. And support means financial support and volunteers and people who would go there, not just now when they see it in the news, but go there in 3 months from now, in 6 months from now. So we're planning to be there. And my message is to everyone who wants to get involved and help, either as a volunteer or as a financial supporter or sending relief supplies, please do get in touch with us through our website or through our social media, whatever.
Say your website, Yotam.
We'd be happy to
give the website.
Yeah, so the website is IsraAid, IsraAid.org. And there's this part in the website that says join us, and then you can join the team and you can donate, and that would be any support. It really goes a long way.
Do you rotate the work? You say you've got 12 people there right now. Will you rotate another 12 in and them out?
We already. This is already the third team.
The third team.
We always rotate. Yeah, we always rotating in the first few months, and then when things are a bit more stable, we actually recruit people to be there long term. And plus, we're also recruiting local people because at the end of the day, they're the ones who stay there. So our team is always a combination of Israelis, Americans, and local Bahamians.
How do they react when you say, we're a Jewish group and we're here to help you out of the goodness of our heart? I mean, what's the reaction been in the Bahamas?
It's actually quite incredible. I mean, it's not only in the Bahamas, but in the Bahamas in particular, a lot of Christian people. We actually work there with a network of 120 pastors and churches.
Wow. And
there, for them, they call us the Israelites.
I love it.
So for them, it's more than just help. It's a spiritual experience, and you really see people's reaction. It's really heartwarming, and we've been received so well, and people are so appreciative about the work we're doing.
Well, it is just terrific what you are doing. It's a mitzvah at this time of the year.
Especially.
I know it disrupts everybody's holidays, but it is a true mitzvah. And for those who are Israeli haters, this is a shining example of some of the wonderful things that Israel does, and we salute you. One more time, give your website, because people like me have it going
sure.
One ear.
So it's www.israaid, Israaid with a double A, .org.
Okay. Well, I hope people will help out. We really appreciate you coming back. Unfortunately, there will be more disasters. Happily, you guys will be the first on the scene to try to help out. So I hope we don't have any for a long time. But when we do, I hope you'll come back and
We're glad that we have you and your organization, Yotam. So listen, Shana Tova.
Happy to be here with you. And thank you. And thank you for all your support. And good luck in the drive.
Thank you very much. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Right. So as he mentioned, the drive, again, everyone listening, it's 813-238-8001. We would love it if you call in and make your donation, not only to support our show, but to support WMNF. This station cannot exist without your support, so we greatly appreciate your calls in. Again, it's 813-238-8001.
And let's see. We have, what do we have here? Thanks, Stuart, by his first name on the air. So, Stuart, thank you. He pledged $118, which is significant. And let's see. It's $118 because the significance of Chai and the number 18 is the reason he pledged $118. Etta and Stuart Gamar Hamatzi Toza.
Which means, for those listening, you know, may you be inscribed and sealed for the year ahead, which is the greeting that we make for Yom Kippur,
okay,
for everyone. And so a couple, I love this, by the way. I just want to mention this because I talked about the nature areas within Israel and how it's just so extraordinary and diverse. So there was an article for those of you who are bird lovers and bird watchers. I believe Israel is the number one place in the world to do bird watching. And I actually watched a show on the Nature Channel one time and people go crazy. Like they come and there's like this whole race to go find as many unique exotic birds as possible during the great migration of these birds from the Arctic, from Europe. Then they go into Africa for the winter. And so they all stop over in different locations in Israel. So like right now, there was an article on these amazing white pelicans that are dropping off at Lake Hula in the northern north of Israel as they make their way down south. So Israel draws about 500 million birds annually from 550 species making migration. It is just incredible. So if you're a bird lover, go check it out.
Did you see any when you were in Israel ever?
I mean, well, I saw some extraordinary wildlife when I was there. I mean, I probably saw like amazing birds, but didn't know who they were.
You saw you didn't see a parakeet with a yarmulke and a tallit on, right?
No, but I've seen incredible wildlife. I mean, I'm not one who would look at that bird and go, that's a blah, blah,
right,
blah, blah,
yeah.
But I could appreciate the beauty.
Yeah, yeah. You did an interview this week Michelle Azar, and I want to play that, but I want you to set it up because she's an incredible person. We're actually going to have two parts. We'll probably get to part two next week or a couple of weeks down the road, but talk a little bit about her and set her up because she was fascinating, I think.
Well, I mean, first of all, she's adorable. She is an actress. You all may have seen her. She does a lot of the crime shows on TV, a lot of the different big hits and on those series. She says she works on a lot of those murder mystery shows as an actress. But she's doing a one-woman show right now called From Baghdad to Brooklyn, and she was in town recently for a private event where she did this show. And it's about her family. So her father's family were Iraqi Jews. And they had to leave Iraq, as we've talked about the Mizrahi Jews during the Farhud, which is like the pogroms, meaning, you know, there's these violent attacks against the Jewish communities in the 30s and 40s. And so they had to flee. And the only place they can go to was Israel. And her mother's family, they were Russian and Polish Jews. And so, you know, so it's this funny little discussion of how, you know, you then blend like these Ashkenazi Jews with these Mizrahi Jews. And even growing up, she really didn't appreciate the beauty of being an Arab Jew, you know, with that descent and her family speaking fluent Arabic and everything. So it was just a lovely conversation on how, you know, to open up the mind of people to bring these communities together and how diverse we all are as Jews. So it's a little bit of a conversation with her, fun conversation with her.
Okay, let's listen.
A few years ago, I was at a reunion for this Havonim Dror, North America. So it's a labor Zionist youth movement that I grew up in. And a woman came up to me and she said, your father's from Baghdad, from Iraq, right? Tell me your story. So I stole in that moment, as any good artist does, I stole the title that my mom had always said she wanted to write about, From Baghdad to Brooklyn. Oh. I said, well, I have a show. And she said, great. Send me the script. I hadn't written one word at the time. Aww. But I just started writing these monologues about my father and what I thought was going to be about my mother, but it really had to go farther back to my grandmother, my bubby. And I saw all these similarities, and I was heartbroken and shocked to realize that this fear and tension that I always assumed that I felt toward Middle Eastern people was because my father was kicked out of Baghdad. And then I started to really interview him and think about my grandmother, whose journals I have and I use on the stage, and talk to my mother. And I realized all that fear was misinformation from her. And all the stories were her own fears about that. Not at all my father. I thought I was avenging my father and his father and all the... None of it was true. So this process for me has been wildly healing, wildly eye-opening. And when I do it in Los Angeles, I have this oud player. and he plays, and that's what did it for me. The music became the focal point, because all of us, I don't care where you're from, right, have a moment of like, oh, what is that song? Where am I being brought to? You know, and I see
that
your eyes.
Sound.
That's exactly, yes, the sound. You don't even know why. You don't even know what about it. It's like this tiny little lilt, and you're brought back to something.
Yeah, I think it's in our DNA, right? Sound
Absolutely.
Is somehow in our DNA,
it's transcending completely.
Right. So you have on your father's side, you have this amazing, rich, Iraqi,
yeah,
Jewish, Arab sound.
Yes.
And then on your mother's side of the family, you've got this amazing Eastern European Russian sound.
Yes. And I really only grew up hearing that music, the Ashkenazi music, like many of us in America.
Yeah.
But I heard my father speaking Arabic to his brothers and sisters. And he became kind of a cool businessman in Chicago in the end, not to do with Brooklyn. But and he only hired people around him that were Palestinian, that spoke Arabic. And I was like, Dad, what's going on? He's like, I don't speak Arabic. He just refused to acknowledge it, because I think for him it was still so separate. And as a little coda, my 14-year-old now is taking Arabic in high school.
Wow.
And I love it. And again, my eyes teared up when I saw the language. Whereas it's so confusing, because my dad said he didn't speak it, but I heard him speak it. He thinks it's a great achievement that people are not necessarily relying on that kind of community feeling. And yet he's like, why is she taking Arabic? He didn't understand the synergy to that either.
It's so interesting, because, you know, for many, many Mizrahi Jews, they all grew up speaking Arabic,
yes,
before Hebrew. Like, Hebrew was actually the foreign,
correct,
language then versus,
like,
versus
Yiddish,
Arabic.
How it was to
Hebrew,
right,
for the Russians. So, and you think about it, all of the Mizrahi Jews from all over Northern Africa and throughout the Middle East, Iran and Iraq,
yeah,
Arabic was just their natural tongue, and it's part of who they are as a culture. And you always wonder, sort of, well, what happened? Where was that? And of course, we all know about the pogroms and the Fahud and everything,
sure,
that happened. And those were traumatic events, but it's still part of that DNA.
Oh, I'm so glad you say so. It really, your face looks the same way, if all your listeners could see it. It looks the same way as I feel about it.
Yeah.
That's right. It just tugs at a chord. I'm going to go next month to do it in West Hartford, Connecticut. And the woman with whom I spoke was like, that's my mission. I want people to know about this sect of people. Because also we're all, you know, the daughters of this group,
right,
that had to leave, but they don't have any hard feelings, it seems.
Right.
You know, there was a lot, like you said, everything happened, both sides. We're not trying to politicize that.
Right.
Right? But there is some truth to the fact that, like, my story is your story. This all happened accidentally. There's so much beauty still to be found in finding the identification rather than the separate.
I mean, it's interesting to me because, you know, we had, as I mentioned to you, we had Dumasani Washington on,
yeah,
who is in charge of this project called the Mizrahi Project. And I went onto the website. I listened to all the interviews. You know, you've got people from Morocco and Tunisia and Libya and Iran and Iraq and just all over the area.
Yeah.
And it's that, and even Egypt, and that even though the trauma or the tragedies of being forced out with nothing but their shirts on their back, and the only place they could go at that time was at the founding of Israel, going, we're going to go to Palestine, we're going to go to Israel, but this, because it was the only place they could go. But yet, even the next generation, the generation after, has this love for where they came from.
Right.
You know, they haven't given it up, that,
right,
that beauty of it. And so I think it's a very interesting story. But, you know, for you and your dad, I mean, how did you ever have those conversations with your mom and your dad to sort of, how do we deal with this? It's a conflict, but not. I mean,
but
it's like,
not.
How do we bring this,
right,
synergy? Because obviously they found each other. There's this Ashkenazi,
really,
Jew.
Yeah, they weren't worried about it.
Right, this Russian Jew, and then there's,
yes,
this Iraqi Jew.
On. Right, my father was completely, completely enamored of a lot of that part is true. My mom was just like, she still is, a singer and vivacious, but had this deep love for Hebrew and music because of her mom. So my father was totally taken by some American beauty who could do it all, and still, and he could bring her home to his family in Israel. Aww. And she could converse and she could understand and be part of it. And my mom was very, I think, enamored by, I mean, he looked like Dr. Zhivago, you know, he looked like completely otherworldly, or maybe that's not the best, you know, but just completely driven. And she wanted out of Brooklyn, you know.
Right.
I mean, so it was like she wanted that feeling that she was being transported. And they always thought they'd live in Israel. I still believe someday I'm going to be able to go see his hometown in Baghdad.
Aww.
He says he has no need. I don't know.
Do you know if that synagogue still exists
in Zagreb?
Yeah,
it does.
Oh wow,
it does. We really, this was about, I want to say 10 years ago. We brought that Torah and made friends, and I'm in touch with the rabbi's wife there. And aww, it's, I would love to go back there. That, I would love that.
That's yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
So when you think about that culture and sort of bringing these two sides together, I know that your show
yes,
really has this political message.
It does. I mean, or it tries to do.
But tell the audience a little bit about that, because I think this is, it's an important part of the story about who we are as
yeah,
Jews and living in the land and living with really our cousins, our brothers and our sisters.
Correct. I think it's so dangerous to... Well, Carl Jung says, you know, any behavior that's repeated without any insight is just going to be dangerous. It's just going to keep repeating. So how can we continue to pause? And I think having the difficult conversations through art, through music, through discussions in an interview setting, through facilitated discussions. I work with Newground in Los Angeles. Aziza Hassan
okay,
is this incredible woman who started the Muslim-Jewish conversation. And she often does a talk back with me. I'm going to do my show at the Skirball Center in November. And so she'll do a talk back with me. And, you know, a quick aside, she's also half Muslim and half like American Kansas Christian. You know, like we all are mutts.
Right. We all have these crazy
exactly,
mixtures.
Right. So here I am, you know, like had I seen her prior to writing this show, I might have been nervous, because that's the ingrained behavior in me that was unchecked, frankly, by my dad, just because he didn't notice it.
Right.
And it was deeply entrenched in me because of my bubby from Brooklyn, from Poland, from the whole story of it. So unchecked behavior is dangerous to replicate, because then I would tell my kids too. I would tell my kids there's something to fear. With prudence, I would like some information to be like, let's treat the stranger as ourselves. Let's continue to be curious. Let's continue to investigate this, the feelings that we think are our own, because they're probably not. They're given from some generational history.
Well, I thought that she was just fascinating. It seemed really, really lively, warm.
Oh, yeah.
And we will have part two of that either next week, the week after. I also want to say, some people wondered about call-ins today because of the pledge drive. We cannot take calls today. We wanted to. We will next week, because I know there's a lot of pent-up angst from folks who
want to have conversation, and we want to have conversation. We actually really enjoy our callers and having discussion with you. And I feel like we're, you know, what I love about the show, too, is that we're reaching people that are outside the Jewish community, outside the Jewish world, and the interest and the curiosity. And I think we all still have so much to learn from each other, as Michelle Azar was saying. So I think that's just a positive message. So the phone lines are wide open right now for donations, and we can't be on the air without you and the support of our listeners, and we are so grateful for you. We just got a $360 anonymous donation, and we would like to put that up for a challenge.
A challenge, that's right.
We'd like to get some matching donations for that. So if you will, please call in 813-238-8001 and express your support for the show, The Third Opinion, as well as for the station, WMNF. Again, the number 813-238-8001. I just want to sort of follow up on one quick thing. We had that lovely donation by by Stuart and Etta for the Chai. Chai is a word that stands for life. And so her donation of 118, specifically focusing on the 18, is a number of life. And so she was wishing us all life. May we all actually be inscribed and sealed for a wonderful and sweet year ahead with lots of good life.
And choose life is the overriding theme of these days of awe.
That's right.
So it makes perfect sense. And Etta, we are so thankful for your donation, and we hope that other people will join us in this pledge drive.
Right, a $360 matching donation right now. So we would really appreciate you calling in again. So the phone lines are open, 813-238-8001.
And I know it drives some people crazy that we have to keep pushing this, but remember, this is a commercial-free radio station. And so we have to pay to keep the lights on. We really do, and we appreciate it so much. And again, there, to my knowledge, there is no other show in the Tampa Bay area, perhaps in the state of Florida, that is like our show.
Right, and I
want to thank good, bad, or indifferent.
I want to thank Scott. I just got a message that Scott just donated $250. So thank you, Scott. We appreciate your donation. And again, we're trying to get a matching donation on that $360 from that anonymous donor. If you would like to, please call in. Please support us. Please support the show. You know, it's like I said, I think we're still growing. We're developing. We've got speakers coming in, and hopefully we're all learning from it. So 813-238-8001.
Okay. Here's a story that I know just sets you off. And it's the fact that Democratic leaders like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer will be speaking at a J Street conference, which you would expect them to do. J Street is another Jewish organization that it lobbies for Israel. It supports Judaism, but it is much, 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 much more liberal than AIPAC.
Well, I don't know that if I say it's more liberal than AIPAC. I think it's different policies. It's a smaller, I think it's a smaller voice in the Jewish community they represent. I don't mind that Nancy.
No, not Nancy. No, that's not what said. So I'll let you, what sets you off is that they're also going to hear from people who
are the PLO.
Right.
So you have the PLO, which is a known identified terrorist organization by the United States, by every country in Europe. I mean, you know, even Hezbollah still has like some political, you know, justification in some European countries and Australia. So, you know, here they have two speakers from the PLO speaking. And that, you know, when you see something like that and you say, okay, how are they adding to the discourse?
Well, but let me take the opposing view. And I'm not sure I agree that that's a great thing to do, but perhaps it opens up a dialogue. Perhaps.
Well, I don't think they're there to open up a dialogue. I mean, I think they're there to set an agenda and continue to confuse issues and spread lies, which is what they've done, you know, in spreading hate. I mean, I've never seen PLO come out and say, you know, we want peace. And that is what, you know, if you're... My issue is extending a hand to somebody who has said we're not interested in the existence of Israel. We you know, our desire is to remove you from the face of the earth versus how can we as cousins find ways to come together and live together and cooperate together. That's my issue with it.
Well, no,
I
understand, but I also remember the audience they're speaking to. They're not going to be easily moved, I don't think. And from the smile on your face, I'm jumping all around. We got another pledge? No, we don't. Okay.
Well, we have someone who said that they're going to do it later tonight. So hopefully. So anyway, listen, everybody call in 813-238-8001. I know I've heard from a couple of people that actually said they're not in a place where they can call, but they're going to donate later tonight. So thank you for all of that. But we need your support for the Third Opinion. Again, we're looking for somebody who can match that anonymous donor's donation of $360. I think that would be my issue with that one. But I will say, you know, it goes back to, and by the way, the PLO said, you know, we've changed our ways. We really actually do want to find ways to work and live. I would be so happy. I'd be like, you know what? You're right. And that goes back to Yom Kippur, right? It's the story of Jonah, which, by the way, for everybody listening, Jonah is not just about the guy who gets swallowed by the whale. So Jonah is it's a book from the Haftorah we always read on Yom Kippur. And the one thing I love so much about the book of Jonah, it's really, so Jonah was a prophet in Israel, and he did not want to go to the king of Nineveh because they were known for, they were just the cruelest, most wicked rulers. I mean, this is a man who chopped off the face of his own children to demonstrate to his enemies that you know, there's nothing ruthless that he would not do. And just brutal, brutal man. And God said, well, I want you to go and sent him there. And he's, you know, obviously resisted, gets swallowed by the whale, shows back up. He did not want to go and offer, you know, and tell them, God said, repent and offer them an opportunity to return to God and have that restoration. And God even like sort of rebukes Jonah and says, you know, who are you? You know, I care about all the cattle on the hills. Like, this is my creation. You know, who are you to not go there? If I want to extend my hand of mercy, who are you to deny that? And I think that's, and the king and all in Nineveh, the whole city, which goes on to the story, Jonah, they all take, literally, it's like their own Yom Kippur. They have a day of fasting where the entire city, it says even the animals repented and they fasted.
And the king wore sackcloth. Right.
Right, and God forgave them. And so I think it's just that, I think everybody has an opportunity to, you know, shift the way you think about something and return and ask for the forgiveness and you know, take a step forward. And I think it's that, so that moment of, you know, I would join hands with the PLO in a heartbeat if they shifted from the ideology of hate and said, you know what, we don't want to do this anymore.
Jean, you know what I always think about during this time of year as we read the story of Abraham and Isaac, but I, as you said earlier, cousins, because Abraham was the father of the Arab world as well.
Right, not just Isaac and Ishmael, but of many children. He had many more children.
Right.
So, absolutely, they are cousins.
It always, as we read that story, I wonder, why can we not get along? It strikes me every year, although I've got to tell you, the story of Abraham and Isaac is just, I know what it means about his faith in God, but it's so disturbing to me.
I know, but I will tell you, a lot of people get confused. They think Isaac was a child. Isaac wasn't a child. He was an adult. He was, I think, 33 years old. And so Isaac
actually... He was 33?
Right. And so Isaac actually made that choice. He had to make that choice and say, I'm going to submit to this because, as they said, they had faith in God that God would deliver. And God did. God obviously brought the ram.
Whoa.
He wasn't a child. Why does everybody think he's a child?
Because that's the way it is. Is they're walking along and he says, Father, and he goes, Hineni. I mean, here I am.
Right, but he's an adult. He's actually an adult. So.
Wow.
There you go. He was there. So anyway, listen, everyone, we really appreciate you calling and supporting the station. Again, WMNF 813-238-8001 and supporting the show, The Third Opinion. So I know we've got a couple of really great interviews coming up in the next few weeks as well. And we'll finish the one with Michelle Azar. So pretty excited about that. I believe we're going to be bringing in the Jewish historian, Jonathan Sarna of Brandeis University. And it'll be such an honor and a pleasure to have him with us. And just lots to talk about, lots of really good things going on in the community.
And Barry Weiss, who has written a book about anti-Semitism, should be joining us in the next couple of weeks. At least we hope to have her on here. But Ian, again, we have to reiterate that in order to keep programs like ours on the air, we need your help. This is your radio station. It is a community radio station, and we need your help and need you to call even after we go off the air. If you want to call in and say, I'm making this for The Third Opinion, we would really appreciate it because, like I say, That's the way we sustain ourselves on the air.
Which, by the way, I just want to thank Jonathan, who just called and made a donation. He was actually reading some of Jonah today. So,
really?
So thank you for supporting us. We really appreciate that, Jonathan. And for all of you, please call and support WMNF again. And The Third Opinion, 813-238-8001.
Because you always learn something new. In fact, I did today. 33? Are you sure about that? You know more than I do. I'll accept here. But that really surprises me. Anyhow, we got to get out of here. We'll be back next week. Same time, same station. I'm Mike Deason.
Lorene Jaffe.
This is The Third Opinion. Have a great weekend and Lashana Tova.
You're listening to WMNF Tampa this Sunday, October 6th, 2019, our Fall Pledge Drive and the first of our programs in 5780. I'm Joy Katzen Guthrie. Welcome to the Sunday Simcha. Whoa.